bench, on the floor, inside the locker room, and in the stands. We're everywhere.
Never back off.
With everything you need to know about the association. This is Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you, coming to you from New York City as the Raptors get set to face the Knicks on Friday night. But Jonesy, bigger news certainly coming on Thursday evening, earlier tonight, as it was officially announced that Pascal Siakam has been named as a All-Star starter for the All-Star game coming up in a few weeks in Chicago. So without further ado, let's bring you some of the comments from earlier tonight from Pascal Siakam when he met with the media, including yours truly and myself, and my man Jonesy, at the NBA store in New York. Here is All-Star starter Pascal Siakam.
Take a shot at it, Pascal. Try and put it in words.
It's crazy. It's unbelievable, man. I think it's, you just got to think back of the journey. You got to think back of my dad, you know, just kind of taking a chance and being like, man, I watched these guys on TV. They play, you know, they follow this orange ball, and it's super fun. People, you know, are excited and watch them play, and it's so exciting. And him wanting, you know, and hoping and dreaming that one of his sons is going to do that, and working so hard to send all his sons to the U.S., you know, get an education, play college ball, and hoping to get to the NBA, and there I am, you know, being able to be at this stage and you know, winning a championship, being an All-Star, not only an All-Star, but starting an All-Star game, like for a lot of people, like that wasn't really possible, and that's something that he dreamed of, and I can just, you know, kind of wish that he was here, and you know, I kind of hate, like, every time there's a big moment, you know, like, it's just because, like, it feels like there's something missing, but I know he's here. I know he's watching me. I can feel his presence. But I think it would be, you know, kind of nice to be able to look at him in the face and just tell him that, like, you did it and we did it, and whatever you put your mind into and whatever you worked so hard for is here, and we're doing it at the highest level.
Special to have your brother.
Oh, yeah, it was surprised a little bit. I didn't know my agent kind of did a little trick on me. But it was fun, man. I think just having that family presence was important. And then obviously we're gonna go to Chicago as a family, and it's gonna be, you know, we're gonna all enjoy that and kind of like think about him and make sure that we keep him in mind.
When you got the more responsibility at the start of this year, did you envision this getting to this point this quickly?
To be honest, yes. Like I think for me it is. From the first day I got to the NBA, like I've always, you know, kind of like wanted to achieve more. Like I felt like the league was, you know, wide open for me to come in and be one of the better players. And we worked really, really hard. And it wasn't easy, and it's not easy. Like, I don't know, I was like one for what last night. Like, this is always a journey, and I think What makes it just fun is having that support and having the people around me believing in me. And from the first day I got to the gym, I always say that my man Rico, you know, even my agents and all those, like, they, from the first day, they saw that in me. And I saw that in myself. And that's why we connected that well. And it's just, you know, I'm so glad that it's happening.
You've often talked about the impact of your play and your game on African players. With you and Joel both starting in the All-Star, sort of what do you think that will mean, not only for Cameroon, but for the entire continent?
It's huge, man. It's huge. I don't think that's something that we saw coming. And I always try to give props to guys like Lumba Mute, the Yordang, the Surge, and, like, all those people, you know, that came, like, before us. And it kind of paved the way for us and us now being able to be at this level. Like, two people from, not only from Africa, two people from Cameroon starting an All-Star game. Like, that's unheard of. I mean, I'm so happy for Joel. I'm, you know, obviously, just all everything that we've been able to accomplish, and I think it's great. It's great for the continent, and I think of guys like Masai and, like, all the work that he does, and I think it's just so great. It's great for all of us.
That was NBA All-Star Pascal Siakam. Siakam named as a starter alongside Joel Embiid, also Giannis Antetokounmpo, Trae Young, and Kemba Walker out in the West. As, of course, then we now will have the two team captains who will divide the teams and split up the teams. But at least as far as the voting is concerned, in the Western Conference, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard, Luka Doncic, and James Harden. So those are your 10 All-Stars with, again, Pascal Siakam making it to the All-Star Game, Jonesy, for the first time in his career and as a starter on top of everything else, from most improved player to NBA champion to NBA All-Star starter. And after that media availability that we just played for you with a number of the reporters that were in attendance, myself, Jonesy, Sherman Hamilton, Doug Smith, Mike Ganter, Blake Murphy, and a few others that were in New York, I had a chance to go one-on-one with Pascal Siakam.
Pascal, as much as you were just talking about believing in yourself and envisioning it, do you ever stand back, though, and think about you've only been playing the game for a decade?
Right.
I mean, it's pretty unheard of.
Right. It's like I try like not to, because like I want to live in the moment and I want to like feel all this, everything that's happening. And obviously I'm like, it's crazy. Like I can just think of like 5-6 years ago what I was doing. You know what I mean? Like it's happening so quickly. But I always try to stress the fact that like I envisioned this. You know what I mean? Like I saw myself doing this, and it was always something that I felt like was attainable, and I put the work in for it every single day, and it's like it won't be fair for me to say this is a surprise, because like it's like I've wished for it. I mean, maybe for a lot of people it is, and obviously it's great, it's amazing, and how fast it's happening, you know. But I've always saw myself doing this and accomplishing this.
I've never asked you this. When was the first time you picked up a ball? Do you remember when you fell in love with the game?
I don't remember exactly the first time I picked up a ball. I mean, my brother's played a little bit, so I got those basketballs around. Yeah. But like, if I want to choose a moment where like I've really like fell in love with the game, or like I thought like basketball was cool, was Basketball Without Borders. Like that's the only moment I can really think of that makes me feel like, yo, like basketball is actually a cool sport, and it's something that brings people together. Look at all these awesome people, they play in the NBA, there's coaches, there's all these people, and they're just all around the game of basketball, and they came all the way to South Africa to help young kids out and do all these things. And I think that's where like my love for the game kind of like evolved. And then when I kind of had like a drive, really, was like after my dad passed. Like that's when everything changed for me in terms of just like, you know, like I had way more now than just like some kid that had a love for what basketball brings to people, or how fun it is. It was just about, you know, making sure that I accomplished something that's bigger than myself.
When you tie that in with the love and the respect you had for your dad, was there a player that was your guy when you're out there practicing? Were you putting on the jersey of someone and counting down, you know, 3-2 right, one, hitting the buzzer shot, and you were who? Or was right, there one guy that was your guy growing up?
Never. Like,
really?
I never had that. I just never was like a guy that, you know, like basketball came so late for me that when he did, it was an outlet for me to go to the U.S. and learn and go to school and stuff like that. But it was never something that I felt like, oh my God, like being an NBA, like, you know, like I think like that's when I got to college, and from then it was just like about me continuing to work hard and watching different players, because I felt like I had to be a student of the game to be able to, you know what I mean? I couldn't focus on one person, because I never really had an idol growing up. Like I had to focus on a lot of different players and trying to learn as much as I can to be the best player I can be.
So is that component still weird for you when you see people walking around with your name on their back and wanting to buy your gear?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. It's unbelievable, man. Like, just seeing that is something that, like, I can't really... sometimes you forget about it, right? Like, and then, you know, you sit back for a second and it's like, man, like, these people are really, like, buying the jersey and it has the Siakam name on it. Like, that's crazy. Like, that's unheard of for where I'm from and you know, just thinking about my whole family. Like, it's crazy.
What do you think your dad would say about that, to see his family name on the back of kids, young and old, from all different walks of the world?
Like, that's always, like, that's what he always wanted. Like, he's always, like, someone that wanted to, like, uplift our family name. He wanted to make sure that, you know, we knew, like, people around knew that this is a good family, this is my family, and like, I'm a good person, and I do good to the community. Like, and the Siakam name is always going to be, you know, like up high, and people are going to look at it and think that like this is a great family, this is a great name, and it represents a lot. So just being able to do that, like I just feel like, you know, like he would be more happy about that, to be honest, than me being an all-star or me being like whatever the case might be. It would be about like you did what I've worked my whole life to do, like make sure that the Siakam name is up there and it's looked at as something great.
That was my conversation one-on-one with NBA All-Star Pascal Siakam. So again, congratulations to Siakam and to the Siakam family. What an honor, no doubt it is, as you heard in that interview, him speaking with such pride, such honor of carrying the Siakam name to these heights, and no doubt going to be a fun time in Chicago in a couple of weeks at the NBA All-Star Weekend. And I suppose now the big question will be is whether or not Siakam will have any guests with him, any company with him, I should say, perhaps that's a better word, Jonesy, any company from his team. And I would certainly anticipate, I don't know if I'll say expect, but I certainly anticipate that Kyle Lowry will be named to the All-Star team yet again as well. We shall see if Fred VanVleet has an opportunity, perhaps in the skills competition, and maybe there's also representation from Toronto with the likes of Terrence Davis in the Rising Stars game as well. Again, we'll kind of keep our fingers crossed for that in terms of a Toronto perspective, and no doubt Raptor fans keeping their eye on that as well. But we now shift our attention away from the NBA All-Star announcement, and let's look at the unofficial halfway point of the season. We started kind of doing this last week on the show as well. Every team has now hit that 41-game mark or longer, and it's a good time to reflect on the first half of the season, look ahead to the second half, and also the approaching trade deadline in the NBA as well. I had a chance to chat with NBA TV's Jared Greenberg. Jared, we've essentially just passed the halfway point now of the season for all the teams. If I were to ask you for one team that maybe stands out as a surprise, in a pro or con way, who would be the biggest surprise thus far this season for you?
It's Eric, it's so hard to narrow down, right?
I mean, there's a lot. All right, give me a few then.
Yeah, I mean, in the West, Memphis being in the hunt at the, you know, in the top eight at the halfway mark. OKC doing what they're doing when they just traded away two MVP candidates.
Yeah.
And then in the East, you know, I think you start with Miami because of how I'll be honest with you, and I'm sticking my foot firmly in my mouth. I didn't think Miami would make the playoffs this year.
Wow.
Now listen, they've started to come back down to earth a little bit, and I think they'll continue to do that. I think they've overachieved. But then the other is you guys, the Raptors. You know, I'm not, I'll be honest, because I admitted that I didn't have Miami in the top eight. I absolutely had Toronto as a playoff team and thought there would be no question about that. I thought you'd be somewhere in that 5-6 range. And I just think that, you know, and even with all the injuries to me, it's the most amazing part is not without Kawhi. It's that you've done, the Raptors have done what they've done with four of their best players and plus Kyle, you know, missing significant time this half. So that's a long-winded answer saying a lot of teams. It's been a year of surprises.
I don't mind long-winded answers when we're doing the show like this. I'll tell you, every team could do this. I acknowledge that. But one of the points we talked about on last week's show, as we were, you know, just approaching the halfway point, was you play that woulda, coulda, shoulda game sometimes. And Toronto, in early to mid-January, had a stretch where they had three games where they lost by a total of 4 points
right. In
those three games.
Yeah.
And in all three games, they led by 15-plus in all those games. And you think, as you just said, as good as they've been in spite of all the injuries, they were that close to their record being even three wins better,
right. Which
would have them firmly in second place in the Eastern Conference, which is crazy.
But also add in that you came back from 30 points down in a game to win too, right?
Yes.
So those things even itself out. And I was watching the other night, we were live on Crunch Time on NBA TV when you guys were playing OKC and nearly blew a 30-point lead.
Oh, yeah.
And my mind is about to explode saying, you know, I was watching because I had the Mavs right after you came back to beat them, so I was really into that game. And then watching the reverse start to happen, I'm like, this cannot happen twice in one season again. And fortunately for the Raptors, they were able to just barely hold on against OKC.
All right, we looked at the pro. Let me ask you for the con then, in terms of maybe a team that you thought would be better. I'll give you one for me, and I know they've dealt with injuries as well, and certainly they're going through it now without Blake Griffin for the rest of the year. But I expected Detroit to be at least a playoff team and certainly not as bad as they are right now.
I think you Toronto guys just like to stick it to the Detroit people. That's what it is. I think we need them to be good because I think it'd be a great rivalry, right? With all the Toronto fans that come down to watch those games. I thought Detroit would be better, but I was just so worried about Blake Griffin, you know. And Coach Casey had made some comments earlier this year that, and there was this great story written in The Athletic about this as well, about the conundrum that they had in Detroit where they need Blake Griffin to get into the playoffs. But in order to get that much out of Blake Griffin, you may not have him for the playoffs, right? So it's this weird balance. Then eventually they just shut him down and he has surgery and probably best long-term for him and hopefully he comes back. You know, I think that Portland, for example,
yeah.
I did not think they'd be in the playoffs. And I took a lot of heat on Twitter for that. And I'm not here to pat myself on the back because, again, I told you I screwed up the Miami Heat one big time. But Portland, I don't think people realize, like Coach Bob, you know, talks about institutional knowledge and corporate knowledge and having all that stuff. Like, that's part of the Raptors' success. Like, as much as Kawhi has left and all that stuff, you still have a core of a coaching staff and a core of a group of players that have been together, a lot of them with the G League success. In Portland, what I think people miss is you have these two great pillars in CJ and Damian Lillard, and everything else around them changed this summer. And that's really hard for players that are so ISO heavy and don't necessarily get their teammates involved, for those teammates right away to figure out how to play with them. And you didn't have a lot of defensive-minded players, on top of the fact that these guards needed in the past guys like Harkless and Al-Farouq Aminu and other guys that could play defense around them to help their weakness. They don't have any of that infrastructure to help them.
All right, so maybe you just answered this, but I'll ask it anyways. At what point do you start looking at one of those two guys then? Because, I mean, they already made the deal just last week or whatever with Bazemore.
Yeah.
They acquired Carmelo Anthony, you know, signed him.
Right.
But then at what point do you say, all right, if we really need to take that next step, we've tried it with this twosome.
Yeah.
We need to split them up. We need to move at least one.
Yeah, I think now. I think you have to. And I think, you know, I think I don't know that there's too many people that have bad things to say about those guys. Personally, certainly not personally. They're both outstanding gentlemen. But just about basketball, about, you know, and I think this is the tough part because we internally they felt so strongly about those two guys that it may have jaded their view of what the rest of the league feels about them. Like, let's just assume it's CJ that would be traded because I think he would be the more likely of the two. What exactly is his value, right? You're probably not getting as much as Washington eventually would be able to get for Bradley Beal once he's becomes trade eligible. You know, I don't know the value that you're going to get back because, again, what I think we've seen enough of the sample size is that he's got to be put into a system that makes sense where maybe there's a bigger guard next to him. Or, you know, I just think that we've seen enough to know what he's not. And we're still waiting to find out if what he is what they have always felt he is, if that makes sense.
It's interesting because, and I always try to walk a fine line here with, I hate getting into fantasy trades and making up my own rumors.
Right.
But of all the guys we've just discussed and the teams we've discussed, we probably could have, you know, wind it back to, say, September, October and say, if we were to project to the trade deadline, which would be some of the bigger names that might be moved if we were to kind of speculate? I would think some people would say, well, let's see what happens with Portland because maybe it's McCollum or Lillard. And let's see what happens with Detroit because maybe Griffin or Drummond or whatever.
Right.
And then, you know, let's kind of continue to look at what's happening with Washington and Bradley Beal.
Right.
And yet here we are at the trade deadline, and all of those guys are still being discussed as potential. And those might be the biggest names, unless you can think of somebody else that you would think that could be moved as a big name at the deadline.
The one thing I'll just say, you know, Bradley Beal can't be traded yet. And I think that both parties, I think right now, might be scratching their heads about whether they should have made that extension or not. You know, because if he wants out, he's not happy with the culture stuff he's been talking about. Well, he locked himself into this position, right? The other name, I think, you know, two teams I'd circle is Cleveland. You know, what are they going to do with Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson? And then the other is the Spurs with DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge. I think those two teams. I don't know what you get out of keeping those names I just mentioned on their current team. I don't know what you get out of it, unless you just want to say we're going to wait for the draft and possibly get more for them at that point when we know what picks we could be getting.
To your point, if the Spurs were to make it into the playoffs and find that 8th seed, even that 7th seed, 23 straight years, it would be a pro sports record, but at the same time, would they be capable of knocking off a Clippers or a Lakers in a 8-1, 7-2 matchup in the first round? I don't think so, but
from the conversations that I've had with people about the Spurs, I don't know that they have been able to answer internally yet what the solution is, because you're right. Like, for most organizations, you would look at and say, we know what our ceiling is. Taking a step back, we could probably elevate our ceiling by just taking a step back, not making the playoffs, getting a really good draft pick, maybe trading and getting some young assets back. But the Spurs have Greg Popovich there, and they don't know how much longer they're going to have him there. So is it worth for them, and does he want to be taking a step back to get more young players? Or do you believe in Coach Pop, and do you have perennial all-stars like LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan with young up-and-coming guys, and Patty Mills having the best year of his career, to say, you know what, we'll sneak in, we'll mess with somebody in the playoffs. I mean, last year we took Denver to Game 7. Why can't we do it again this year, you know? So I think that's a real internal struggle they're having. And I don't know that they have the answer to what they want to do yet.
Okay, last one for you. I'll end it kind of where we started here with looking for the surprise team. One in each conference. Aside from the top seeds, and I'm talking number one, who do you think has the best chance to maybe make some noise in the playoffs, in the East, to knock off a Milwaukee, to keep them out of the finals? And let's assume that the Lakers stay in that top spot. Who's got the best chance in the West?
West, I mean, I'm still big on the Clippers. I think the only thing that stands in the way of the Clippers is them taking the regular season for granted and going to flip that switch, and it's just not there, you know? So I still lean towards the Clippers. In the East, I think there's a couple of things. I think the Raptors could do it. You just look at pure talent. Like, Siakam looks like he's the real deal. He is unbelievable. And on the defensive end, for him to be able to guard a Giannis, or, you know, at times, if you know, and that's what makes it so scary with the Raptors, is they have so many different options to put on a Giannis. I'm still intrigued by Boston too, and I'm very much convinced that they will tweak their roster in some manner. But I just think Kemba's too good. Tatum is getting really, really good again, and I don't know if people are seeing that. And Jaylen Brown is really freaking good. Like, and maybe they trade Gordon Hayward. It's one of their pieces. But if they don't, he was an all-star in the Western Conference. And I think that there's a couple of games. He just had one the other night where he just has the ability to take over games. And you don't get to see that too often because of the talent around him, which they're okay with. But I think Toronto and Boston would be my top two teams that I think could knock off Milwaukee.
That was my one-on-one with Jared Greenberg. When we come back, you'll hear from Tim Bontemps and Ala Abdelnaby. That and more coming up on Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This is Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you again, broadcasting this week from New York City as the Raptors get set for the Knicks coming up on Friday night, and then the road trip continues on to San Antonio on the weekend as well, with that game tipping off against the Spurs on Sunday. You just heard my conversation in the last segment with Jared Greenberg. Also, special thanks, no doubt, to Pascal Siakam for that conversation. But in the interview with Greenberg from NBA TV, we talked about the halfway point and expectations for the second half, etc. I went into a similar discussion and also talked about potential trades as well, with the trade deadline approaching, with ESPN's Tim Bontemps.
Tim, earlier in the show, I was talking to Jared Greenberg. I'm going to ask you a similar type question. If there's one team in each conference right now that you could give me pro and then a con, a surprise and a letdown at the halfway point from each conference.
Only because I like you, I'm going to answer the same questions as Jared Greenberg. Normally, I would not. No, I'm just kidding. Jared's great. One surprise and one letdown from each conference. The immediate surprise in my head is the Memphis Grizzlies, right? Like, sure. This is a team that has all these super young guys, was, you know, had all their guys on minutes limits, weren't playing John Morant more than 30 minutes a game, or even more than 28, I think. We're clearly in a development stage, and now they're in the eighth seed in the West, right, and playing great. Obviously, the bottom of the West is not the same as it's been. The conference is much more even now. But still, for them to be on the run they are in now and in the playoffs, I think is really impressive. West disappointment, you could say the Pelicans. They've had a lot of injuries, though, so I'm actually going to say the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Sure.
For all the talk about how good Karl Towns is, that team still is mired in the middle of nowhere in the West, and they're not going anywhere. That situation, I think, bears monitoring going forward, right? There's other teams out there. Like, you could even say Portland, too, but they've had a ton of injuries. But Minnesota, even when Towns was healthy, they were losing games. So I think they've been disappointing. In the East, it's kind of funny. I have to say Indiana, I guess. Like, okay. Indiana's kind of where they were supposed to be. Like, you could say Toronto, too, right, given the way they play. But I think I wasn't sure Indiana was going to be able to make the playoffs, and they've been really, really good. Domantas Sabonis has taken a step forward. Malcolm Brogdon has played well when he's been healthy. They still don't even have Victor Oladipo yet. Mm-hmm. They've really made it a true top six in East. But look, you could say Boston, you could say Toronto. Both teams have been very good. Milwaukee's obviously been great again. The disappointment part is kind of tricky, too, because generally the teams at the top of the East are who they were supposed to be. I guess I'll say Chicago. This was a year where the Bulls, people thought, could take a step forward, right? Could compete for a playoff spot. They've been bad. Lauri Markkanen has, in my opinion, may have been the most disappointed player in the league. Guy in his third year, people thought would really take a step forward, has really regressed. Clearly not fitting in with what Jim Boylan wants to do in Chicago. So, it's a little tricky, like I said, because the league, especially in the East, is kind of the way it's supposed to be, more or less. But I would say Chicago fight the point team.
All right, let me just start with the East, and I'll go back to the West. Then one of the teams that we were talking about earlier in the conversation with Jared was, I wondered about Detroit. Now they've been hit by the injury bug, and obviously losing Blake Griffin again now for the year.
Yeah.
How much do you think that factors into now what Detroit wants to do short-term, long-term? We heard the rumblings about a potential Andre Drummond trade. Now you lose Blake Griffin. This is a team that you've assumed was going to be at least a 7-8 seed in the East. Now they're dropping off. What does the future look like for them? They're locked into Dwayne Casey. They don't necessarily have that young stud to build around either. They've got a piece in a Derrick Rose they can dangle. What do you think unfolds in Detroit?
It's hard to say, really. I mean, I think the thing, looking around the NBA right now, it's hard to find the match between buyers and sellers, mm-hmm. right? First of all, there just aren't a lot of sellers. Second of all, the buyers don't really have stuff to trade. Like we're talking before, you know, the Sixers-Raptors game, and the Sixers are interested in trying to make moves, right? They don't really have a lot to trade. Like, their best assets, this guy, Zaire Smith, who was drafted in the 2018 draft, who has been bad in the G League this year and doesn't have a ton of value. But that's like their one young asset. So what are you getting for him? Like, I don't know, like a nice young player maybe, but like not a guy that's going to dramatically move the needle. Like, it's probably not enough to build a package around him for, say, Derrick Rose, right?
Yep.
You know, the Lakers are a team that's looking for a creative player with the ball. Like, is Kyle Kuzma enough to get Derrick Rose? Maybe, maybe not, right? So, like, that's kind of the weird thing about this year's deadline, is that these teams that are bad, the few teams that are bad that want to sell, whether it is Detroit or even a team like Golden State with guys like Alec Burks, can they get a second for him, right, to get away from the hard cap and just try to get some assets? The teams that are bad don't really have, you know, even if they have stuff to offer, the teams that are good don't have the stuff to give them back to really make a trade. Mm-hmm. So I think we could be looking at a pretty slow deadline overall. As for Detroit, you know, they're a perfect example. They're trying to move Andre Drummond. There hasn't been much interest in him, clearly, right? We talked about Rose. They are stuck with the Blake Griffin deal. So my guess is they're going to end up moving Drummond and or Rose for whatever they can get, but they might just end up stuck with those guys and then having to make decisions, particularly with Drummond this summer, on whether they want to keep him for a longer-term deal and try to flip him down the road or just let him go and start over. I mean, it's a tough situation there because they don't have the young guy to build around. Like, say, in Oklahoma City with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Canadian star, right? Or some of these other teams with young players, like a Memphis with a bunch of young guys. So they might just really have to try to tear it down to the studs and rebuild here over the next few years.
You mentioned the young Canadian star. I'm gonna divert for a second here and ask you, as an American guy, but following the league very closely, who is the best Canadian player right now? It's been a question that's been asked for the last few weeks north of the border here.
Well, I mean, who are the candidates? Because I think I know my answer, but I don't want to forget somebody.
I would say the top three you would assume would be Shea, Jamal Murray, and probably Andrew Wiggins, if he's even still in that.
Yeah,
bubble.
Wiggins definitely not in.
And
the bubble,
I don't think so either.
No.
I think it's
sure
a two-horse race between Murray and Shea.
I didn't want to make sure there's somebody besides them. I think it's clearly Shea.
Yeah.
You know, Jamal's really good, but Jamal has not been able to play at the consistent level I think the people have wanted to see for a while. And Shea, to me, is a much more dynamic guy at both ends. I first saw Shea play in the NCAA tournament with Kentucky, and he blew me away on the court. Obviously, I'm covering the NBA. I don't have a lot of time to study the draft till later on in the year when I get a chance to really look at it. And I remember calling a few people in the league, being like, this guy, like, he was playing with Kevin Knox. I was like, this guy's awesome. Yeah. Like, why is this guy not, like, a top five pick? Like, I looked him up. He was, like, in the middle of the first round or late in the first round. I was like, what the heck? And he shot up to where he ended up, I think, 11 in the draft. But before the late part of the college season, he wasn't even supposed to be a lottery pick. But I think you look at his length, his athleticism, his playmaking ability, playing with Chris Paul is about the best thing Canada could have hoped for, right? So, you know, assuming Jamal and Shea both play this summer, which I think they will, that's going to be one of the best backcourts in the international game going forward. Obviously, a huge shame what happened with Dwight Powell.
Yep.
last night. That's really going to hurt the Canadians a lot this summer. I think he was going to be a really key piece for them.
Yeah, agreed.
But, you know, if your starting point is Shea and Jamal, whoever's one or two, Canadian basketball is going to be a good place for a while.
And the hope is, hopefully, that R.J. Barrett's part of that conversation at one point. As a rookie right now, he's not, I don't think, in that conversation.
No.
But you know, hopefully soon enough.
Yeah, he's going to be fine.
Let me jump back to, you mentioned Minnesota. Maybe you already answered this in talking about the lack of potential suitors out there or suitable trades.
Right.
What does Minnesota do? Because they've been kind of running in quicksand for quite some time now, and can they move an Andrew Wiggins? Would they even consider moving Karl-Anthony Towns? Being left with Wiggins, it seems like Andrew might be the guy to move, or what do you do with that team?
Yeah, I don't think there's a big market for Andrew at this point either with the amount of money and years left on his deal. I mean, my guess is they'll probably do something with Robert Covington between now and the deadline. They just made a trade recently to clear a roster spot and move out Jeff Teague. That seemed like a precursor to another deal. I mean, they've been interested in D'Angelo Russell in the past. It's hard to see a deal getting made there right now that makes sense for both sides. You know, so I think at this point, my guess is they probably do something with Covington, and otherwise they kind of stand pat. I mean, they could say that Towns missed a bunch of games. I don't think there's any chance to talk about moving Karl Towns right now, but as you start to project forward and look around the league at who's the next young guy that's going to be available at some point, given the way Minnesota keeps trending, I think people, if this season continues the way it's going, I think people are going to start looking at Minnesota and say, you know, at some point, you know, that pot's going to start to boil, and you're going to have to wonder, you know, what the future is for Karl Towns there.
All right, last one for you. Let me put your GM hat on here.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do if you're Bobby Webster and Masai Ujiri when you've got, you're the defending champs, you've got three major free agents coming up in Van Vliet, Gasol, and Ibaka, and yet Masai has been saying, as any general manager should, especially as defending champs, we're going to die trying to run it back and trying to win this thing again. How do you think that this team handles it? Also factoring in all of the injuries and maybe not even knowing who or what you are because you've only had a healthy roster for 8-9 games thus far.
Yeah, I know we're talking before this game, but I think the result of this game will play an interesting role in deciding what they do. Not that they're going to blow I don't think they're going to blow this up in any way, but this is the one like real live opponent they've got for the next while, right? They've played a few soft teams here. They won a few games in a row. They have a very soft schedule going into the trade deadline after this. This is kind of the one marquee game here, national TV game back in the States, playing against a premier opponent in the division, right, in the conference. They come out and play well today, you know, I think it shows, it gives them another data point to show them like, hey, we got a chance to really be a factor in the East. I think as Toronto looks at things, they see themselves right in the middle of this mix of teams from 2 to 6 that I'm watching every day.
Sure.
Toronto, Boston, Miami, Indiana, and Philly that could end in really any order, right?
Yep.
And, you know, I think if you're the Raptors, what your hope is that you finish second or third with Miami and Indy sixth. And you avoid a scenario, you don't have to play Milwaukee, Boston, or Philly until the conference finals. Mm. I think you tell the Raptors before the season, we can get to the conference finals and we don't have to play Toronto or Boston, Philly, or Milwaukee. Until then, only beat one of them to make the NBA finals. Everybody would sign up for that in an instant, right?
Sure.
So going back to my point, though, about, like you said, with where the league is at and what the overall marketplace looks like, my guess is if the Raptors do anything, it's going to be on the margins. I don't think we're going to see another Marc Gasol trade this year. I think simply because there aren't those guys available. Like, people talk about Drew Holiday. Like, he's a name that's come up a lot this year, right? Is Drew Holiday going to get traded? The Pelicans are 3 games out of a playoff spot. He's not getting traded. Derek Favors isn't getting bought out. J.J. Redick's not getting traded. Like, they're going to try to make the playoffs. Zion Williamson is coming back tonight. Like, everybody's going crazy about that, right? Like, they want to try to win. So you look around the league, and there's just not the guys available for them to go get like a Marc Gasol. So unless something dramatically changes between now and the deadline and, like, say the Pelicans lose 9 in a row and decide, well, maybe we should trade Drew, I think short of that, you're going to see a, you know, maybe Stanley Johnson gets moved with a couple second-round picks or something to get, like, a marginal player, something like that. But I think, you know, to your point, the Raptors have won all these games without having everybody healthy. I think the Raptors look at it and say, our top 8-9 guys, we feel really good, and, you know, we might be able to get to the conference finals without doing anything at all.
That was Tim Bontemps from ESPN. When we continue on Hoops, we're finally going to put Jonesy to work as he will go one-on-one with Ala Abdelnaby on Hoops from New York on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This is Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you, broadcasting from New York City. Final segment of the show. And again, we're at the halfway point. We're looking at the Eastern Conference specifically, but a lot of stories around the league as well. But no doubt, in Toronto, in Philadelphia, it's a battle for that second seed. I don't know if anybody, Jones, is catching the number one seed, but between Philadelphia and Toronto, Boston, Miami, we're probably going to end up throwing Indiana into the mix as well. A lot going on in the East, and to take a look at the East and the rest of the association, Jonesy, one-on-one with Sixers color analyst, former NBA player, Ala Abdelnaby.
Ala, good to see you. Means Philadelphia's in town, and I want to talk to you about the way this team is playing without Joel Embiid and what it's done to Ben Simmons. And I look at the Toronto Raptors last year. They played one style with Kawhi Leonard. They played another style when he was off the floor or out of games altogether. And I'm seeing that kind of developing with the Sixers, which can only be to their benefit later on down the line.
Well, I think it makes you multifaceted, as you touched on. And also, it's opportunity.
Yes.
It's an opportunity for everyone to step up. More minutes are going to be available, not just to the five spot because of the way Brett Brown wants to play. I think those minutes get evenly distributed amongst the front court and the back court. So there's opportunities for guys like Matisse, and I'm just using him at the top of my head, but Al Horford in particular, Josh Richardson in particular, these are guys that are going to get the ball more. And what we've seen from the 76ers, Jonesy, is the pace.
Right.
76ers
right.
want to get up and down because Joel's not in the lineup. There really isn't a need to be sedentary and post up as much because, again, he, when he's in the lineup, commands that kind of attention.
Right.
Without him, you're a little freer to go up and down. So you see the 76ers playing a little more north-south.
It plays into Ben's game, doesn't it?
Absolutely it does. It's one of his strengths, in particular when you can get him to start the offense at a high speed, get quick shots for other people before the defense gets set. That's one of a place where he excels. And then the other thing is if he can, and this is where it's tough against the Raptors because Coach Nick Nurse's team plays such good defense, but we've seen Ben get to the basket too.
Yes.
Now that'll be the test tonight. Can Ben get to the basket on a number of occasions? Up until now in the past, the Raptors have done a really good job of holding him.
Well, the Raptors had this guy named Kawhi Leonard, who's not around, but I will say this. With his size, athleticism, and his length, OG Anunoby's a pretty good matchup for a Ben Simmons, isn't he?
No question about it. And he's a gamer, too. In other words, I think he's embracing that challenge. So you're going to get his best. He's physical. He's great laterally. I think he's done a good job of staying low when he slides his feet. And then he's strong, so he can be a little bit shorter and give up a few inches, but yet still compensate that for that with his strength. So I like the combination. When you talk to Nick, he's happy with the way he's made strides defensively, but I think he also wants him to score a little bit, too, whenever the opportunity presents itself.
Yeah, no, that would be something big. That would give them a little bit of a boost on the offensive end. The other guy we should touch on before we leave and just kind of spin around the East, Ala, is Al Horford.
Yeah.
With Ben being out of the lineup, Al played more of the five kind of in Boston. That in the five out, he was the five that was out a lot of the time. It seems like he's doing more of that with Joel out of the lineup here in Philadelphia.
You're seeing him play closer to the basket, more flat along the baseline as well. I think, it's an opportunity, as we touched upon, for a lot of different guys to be able to, right now, perhaps say, hey, this is what I'm capable of doing. And what you've seen, I guess, from Al is just something that he knows he's been.
He's a good player, man.
And he knows he's done it for 13 years, so he knows what he's capable of, and now he's able to play in his sweet spots out on the floor. You can tell he's a little more comfortable. It's tough to transition to a team that's already established as far as its pillars are concerned. He was trying to come in and add, be an accessory, and he's turning out to be a really good accessory as the season's gone on.
With Ala Abdelnaby from the Sixers TV broadcast crew, let's spin around the East.
Sure.
I know people say, you know, do you look at the standings? People are like, oh, I don't look. I look.
Looked at it this morning.
Every morning. Every morning. And we get to the point in April where you're refreshing it.
Absolutely. By the minute.
By the minute. Because, if they win and they lose. So let's be honest here. From 2 to 6 in the East, they are jammed in. There's like two.
What, one or two game difference?
Two and a half games between five teams.
Yeah.
The likelihood of a Sixers-Raptors matchup has to lie somewhere in there for April, May, or June. But how coveted is the two spot right now in the standings?
Oh, I would imagine it'd have to be huge because it allows you home court advantage for as far as you can go. So at least until the Eastern Conference Finals. So, I think the idea that you can recognize one of the things you do well for the Sixers play at home.
Right.
And if you can cater to that, I think that serves you well moving forward. Plus, you also get to avoid, you know, the pitfalls of life on the road. Yes. You remember last year's series here.
Oh, yeah. How can you forget?
Does it get any closer to that? And I wonder if Game 7 is in Philadelphia. Yeah. Does the outcome change a little?
Interesting.
I would imagine it would.
Yeah. And the guys that do one of our shows in Toronto here called Open Gym, a terrific show, they just asked me about that. And I said, no game in April means any – no game in January means anything in April, but the minutia of, well, the game is being played in Toronto or in Philadelphia, or so
that stuff matters.
It does. Yeah. It does matter.
It's hard to focus on it when it's 3-4 months in advance, right. But you do yourself well if you just at least paid attention to it and realize that the regular season does play a role.
Let's handicap the East, and I'm looking at three of the teams of those five: Toronto, Boston, Philadelphia. Obviously have a little bit of experience. Toronto has championship, sure. The championship experience. But then I'm going to look at Indiana and Miami. They're playing well, but when we get to April, May, like, what does the experience factor have for those teams that don't have a lot of guys that have been there in prominent roles before? Miami has Jimmy, but everybody else around him, it's a new experience.
And that's, I'll be impressed when those guys like Tyler Hero and Robinson and those guys, if they can start playing and stay the way they keep the level that they have been all season long, in that they played at a high level the first right. 2 months. They've never played this many games in their lives as basketball players because right. they've never had to go through an 82-game schedule. When the fatigue hits them like it does with a lot of rookies and they can still produce, then I'll be convinced. Right. Indiana's another story, though. Indiana's got veterans, guys who, like Malcolm Brogdon, who comes over. When right. you talk about Sabonis, when you talk about Oladipo, who's going to be back in the lineup within a matter of days, weeks, they I think, have more to work with, more that they can lean on because they've had dudes who've had success in the past. I don't know if Miami has that yet. You mentioned Jimmy, but those other guys are still, right. you know, I want to see them do it when it's crunch time.
Would you consider Indiana the sleeper of the five
Absolutely.
Teams that we've talked
yeah,
about, Ala?
I don't forget about Indiana. Yeah. They worry me yeah. because they defend, because they're efficient offensively, and they're going to get better, assuming that, you know, Oladipo can come back and be, you know, what he's capable of being. So, yeah.
Let's handicap the coaches in all of this, too. They've all kind of got that. I mean, Nate McMillan.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Eric Spoelstra. Brett's been through it. Nick's been through it. I mean, everybody, Boston, Brad Stevens, everybody's had their little run in terms. What role does game planning and coaching play once we get into that part
I think
of the
coaches
year?
Coaches can lose you games. I don't know if they win you games in the playoffs. So
why do you say that, Oliver?
Well, because I think strategy and not adjusting to things, not being able to adjust live during a game. Some coaches are really, really good at that.
Yes.
Some aren't.
Yes.
Some stick to the script no matter what happens out there, and some can see things before they occur and kind of like nip that trend in the bud, if you
right,
will.
Right.
So I think that's a key part of playoff basketball. Not just the adjustments day to day, game to game, but minute to minute.
Yeah. Last thing before we go, do you look at the guys at the teams at the bottom fighting for 7 and 8? Orlando looks like they're coming on. Brooklyn's been kind of up and down,
yeah,
and then
figure them out.
It is. And then you've got some other teams in there that you can't really count out. I mean, will Detroit catch fire? I mean, Blake's gone, but Dwayne Casey knows what he's doing. How do you handicap the bottom there, Ala?
Well, I worry about the fact that if a team comes in and gets hot, that's the bottom line.
Yes.
If they come in,
timing, right?
Yeah, if they finish the season off well, even if they get into the eighth spot, they're dangerous because now they've seen success and they're feeling good about their game. And matchups too come into it.
Right.
And if you match up well against the team, things could be interesting. So yeah, I'm curious to see who gets hot down the stretch, who's able, because we always hear the phrase, "Well, teams are always built to gel down the stretch."
Right.
I want to start seeing who gels down the stretch.
Ala, always great to chat with you. And I think we get to do it once more. This is the third of four meetings, and I hope to see you again soon.
Always, Jonesy. Good to see you, buddy. Thanks for time.
That was Jonesy in conversation with former NBA player, Sixers broadcaster now, Ala Abdelnaby. Thanks to Ala Abdelnaby, also Tim Bontemps, Jared Greenberg, and NBA All-Star starter Pascal Siakam. Thanks to all those gentlemen for joining us on tonight's show. For our entire production crew, for Paul Jones, I'm Eric Smith. Thanks for tuning in to Hoops from New York on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.